Okay, we left off last week, so we had spent a lot of time trying to define what exactly possible mikisnin is, and we came to the realization that even if a person eats something that is halachically possible mikisnin, I'm not sure what it is, but if we even discover something that is possible mikisnin, so then if you eat a certain amount of it, you would be required to wash and bench and tesedaim, etc. So how much is that amount? So the Gemara uses the phrase kviya suda, which is very unclear what that means. So there are several approaches to the Gedolei HaPoskim, what criteria we use to define kviya suda. So one approach is, let's take a look at the definition of suda in other areas of halacha and see whatever that volume of suda means in other areas of halacha. Could be that's what Chazal meant here as well. So only if you go down that route, then there's a further breakdown in the poskim, which other area of suda are you looking at? So some poskim said, let's look at Ucha Suda in terms of Erevin. The Gemara is an Erevin, talk about Mazon Beis Sudas being required for an Erev. So if Mazon Beis Sudas is Beis Sudas, then you cut in half of one Suda. How much is Mazon Beis Sudas? So the Machlekes is showing him. One of the Maskanas of Gemara is the amount of bread, the equivalent of 6 eggs worth or 8 eggs worth. So we do your math, so it's half of that, for Suda Achas. So we come out to 3 or 4 eggs worth of food. That's a very, very small amount. A good box of cookies, you can knock off well more than 3 or 4 eggs worth of flour. So if you go with that approach, that Kedei Su'uda, Kviya Su'uda of Chazal, is the Kviya Su'uda as half of the Su'uda of Erevin, so then it's going to be very, very quickly get to that point that I'm going to wash and bench on possible Mekistin. So other poskim said no, that the model of looking for some other Su'uda is correct, but you're looking at the wrong suda. The suda you should be looking at is the suda of Hafarshas Chala, because the shia of Hafarshas Chala is Kedei Arisei Seichem, Kedei Saschem Shebemidbar. The amount, in order to be Chaim and Chala, you have to have enough flour that's equal to the amount of mon that they ate in the Midbar. Now, the mon that fell every day was supposed to suffice for 2 meals, because it was Beis Sudas, people eat Sudas Bokman Erev. So how much mon fell? So if you do the math, Rashi and Chumash quotes the math that Chazal did, it comes out to 43 1/5 eggs worth of flour. That's the shear of the base sudas of the mon. So you cut that in half, and you have 21 3/5 eggs, if I'm not mistaken, of flour, if I did that math right. So it comes out that if you go with that model, you can enjoy your cookies. You can have 3 boxes of cookies, a lot of cookies, as long as you keep yourself below the threshold of 21 3/5 of eggs worth of flour of cookies, then that's still considered to be possible, but kisa not requiring to bench. So you have mamash machlekes min hakotzer lekotzer. This is all assuming that we're looking at the right model, that we're looking at some objective number, some other area of halacha, and we're just not sure which number to pick on. So other poskim, including Rav Moshe, thought that neither model is correct. The correct model for possible kissing for Yasuda is the feed darker shal oilam, whatever the oilam is up, whatever in that time, in that place, people consider to be kedei suuda, that's the amount that you have to eat in order to be called kvi Yasuda. So Rav Moshe lived in America, so he's trying to figure out what do people eat in America. So people eat a lot of meals in America. So which meal are we talking about? So Rav Moshe writes breakfast. He doesn't think it's really a meal in America. People grab a Danish on the run or something, a donut on the run. So that's not, find the Lower East Side, they didn't grab too many donuts, find more Danishes. So that's not considered to be a, the lunch, people eat on the grab or something in the office. That's not dinner. So Rav Moshe says, that's when people sit down, family time, having dinner. Yeah, if you live back in the 1960s, maybe that was true. I'm trying to remember the last time I ate dinner with my family. One of the only positive sides of COVID was, I remember the early weeks of COVID back in March and April. So we used to have family dinner time together because no one was going anywhere. So we might as well eat something together. I can't say in a post-COVID world, but in a world where we're still, some people are going out somewhere. So that great privilege is not as prevalent anymore. Anyway, so Rav Moshe writes that dinner, that's the meal that everybody sits down and eats together, and that's considered to be the Kedei Kviya Suda. So you have to make a cheshbon. What do people eat for dinner? How much do people eat at dinner? Most people don't know wash at dinner, so you have to figure out what do people eat of other foods. So you make a cheshbin, you have a piece of chicken. I'm trying to think what dinner is. Sometimes chicken, a piece of leftover kugel from Shabbos, or some salad, you know, maybe if you're lucky, some for dessert at the end. So you add up everything that you ate. And if you eat that equivalent of food, a possible kiss, if you would sit down at 12 o'clock at night and munch on a box of cookies, if you'd eat 9 eggs, whatever the number is, that the equivalent of what people eat for dinner, that would be the kviyas sudah of Chazal. So that's a legitimate different model. So yesh v'yesh, a lot of different nuances, how to figure this out. We should follow Ramosha's Agdara, the number 3 or 4 eggs is a very, very small amount. 21, 3/4, that's a humongous amount. Pshara a little bit, somewhere in the middle. That's the svara that Ramosha works with. However, there's a major, major point that the Poskim raise about when we make these calculations, whatever number you're using. So I'm sitting down and eating a box of cookies, eating a box of crackers, eating something that's reached the criteria, meets less risk criteria possible to kiss in. But what if I don't only eat that food? What if I eat other foods to accompany that possible kistin? So I sit down and have some crackers together with some tuna fish. I sit down and I have some cookies together with a piece of cheese or something. So do I say that in order to reach the shear, whatever shear you want, whether the shear is 3 eggs, 4 eggs, 23 eggs, 9 eggs, whatever number you want, magic number you want to put on this, is it necessary that it has to be met by the possible kistin itself? Or do the other foods that accompany the Basel of Gistin complement it and add on and can put you over the edge, and now you would be required to make it till Sedayim, wash, pens, hamotzi, etc. So the Magen Avraham writes that he thinks that the other foods do add up to the tally. So says the Magen Avraham, if you sit down and you have to pass on the kistin, and you have other foods that accompany it, so when you make the final number, you may end up having to wash and bench, provided that you waited kazayis to pass on the kistin. If you didn't need a kazayis to pass on the kistin, there's nothing to discuss. So provided that you waited kazayis to pass on the kistin, accompanied by other food, that's enough to have to wash and bench, says the Magen Avraham. So first of all, not everyone agreed to this Magen Avraham, number one. And number two, even within the world of the Magen Avraham, there was a further machlekes in the later poskim, not a little contemporary of you guys, contemporary poskim from my days, machlekes in Rav Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman, what exactly the Magen Avraham said, what was included in this statement of the Magen Avraham. So Rav Moshe understood the Magen Avraham as all-encompassing statement. So Rav Moshe said, a guy sits down to eat, so if he has a kazayis above his possible to kiss in, you look at anything and everything else on the table. Whatever else he's munching away at in the context of eating that kazayis possible to kiss in, and it's all marshed up to the shear, or Moshe used again that middle cup of Moshe, so to speak. And Moshe says if you reach the point of having X amount of eggs, whatever the eggs amount of volume of a person's chicken and salads and kugels from dinner from last night was, you would be required to wash and bench. Everything on the table counts. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said, no. Rav Shlomo Zalman said, that's not even what the Magen Avraham meant. What the Magen Avraham meant was, like the first mashal I gave, you have crackers and tuna fish. So then I understand that the tuna fish joins forces with the crackers because the tuna fish complements the crackers. You eat them together with the crackers. Mashain Kane says, Rav Shlomo Zalman, if you have a brownie and a slice of cheese, I says, mash. So the cheese is like do with the brownie. You don't put a slice of cheese on a brownie, make a brownie sandwich with a slice of cheese on it. So Shlomo Zalman said, there's no shaykh, there's no connection between the two, and therefore it doesn't add up to the shear. So again, so you have a triple machloek is now playing out in the postgame in terms of possible bekistin. Building off of last week we had a machloek is what possible bekistin is. Now, once we've decided what it is, based on all our grandiose cheshbanos of last week, once we've established food X is possible bekistin, so now what do you do with it? So now, kviyas suda is critical, that's the Lashon HaGemara, kviyas suda alai, it's Pesach Gemara, it's Ketzim Mevarchim. How do you define kviyas suda? 3 different possibilities. And even within, once you have that possibility, so then how do you do the math? Do other foods add on? And even in Tumtzeh Levi, the other foods add on, how do they add on? All of the foods add on, or only the foods that normally accompany that particular possible kistin? So with all this background, we can now begin to tackle some of the common applications of Maisel. These are very, very real shayla. They happen all the time, these shayla. So the first and foremost shayla is at a kiddush. You come to a kiddush. That's something that probably most of us haven't been at in an awfully long time. But a person comes to a kiddush, and they're about to attack the kiddush table, and they realize the following. That first and foremost, they have to be at a kiddush b'chum suda. So hopefully, Mitzvah Shabbos, next semester we'll talk more about the Mitzvah of Shabbos. But there's a little bit of an overlap between the two. So they have to be Yatzi Kiddush Makom Suda. So in order to be Yatzi Kiddush Makom Suda, there's a big machlekes and we shine him whether you need Hamoitzi or not. So most people are making, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Minhag of the Shittas HaGa'onim. Most people, anyone who eats any Kiddush Shabbos morning in shul is relying on the Shittas HaGa'onim. You don't have to actually wash. But the Goyim say you do have to have mezonis. The Goyim happen to hold you can make a goffin also, but that many people don't like that. But let's say mezonis. So the common practice is the person makes kiddush, and then they have mezonis. Mezonis, you have to have a kazayis and mezonis, unless the kazayis is garnished. So your first move at the kiddush is you can have a piece of cake, have some cookies. And now you go for broke. After you finish your cake and your cookies, then you go spazieren around, and you go for, I don't know, you guys tell me, come on, tell me what's there? So first step is you attack a little bit of sushi. Then after the sushi, then you go for what? You go for the
herring.
You go for some cholent. You go for some kugel. You go for some, come on, a little higher quality kiddushes, guys. Come on. It's been so long. You go for poppers. You go for wings. You go for assorted things. Again, you know, you pick your community. You have a schmack and you're nowhere near... When you're done, you're still going strong. And all of a sudden, it dawns on you. Listen, I have a serious problem with benching now. Why? Because you just had a kazayas of cookies, and you had nine kebetzim of other kinds of food all mixed together. So you, invoking the Magen Avraham, you just joined forces. All those foods just joined forces with the mezonos, with the cookies. And I have a serious shot of having to bench. So according to Ramesha, the answer is yes. You are required to wash a bench, according to Ramesha. According to Rishon Lezion, you're not required to wash a bench. Why? Even if the Magen Avraham is right, which again, not everyone agrees. So even according to the Magen Avraham, so one wouldn't have to wash a bench under these circumstances because the other foods that you're eating together, so to speak, you're not really joining forces. Unless you're at an old style, you know, a Hamish Shtibel Kiddush, where you're having crackers with herring, with whitefish, with tuna fish, with egg salad. Those kinds of foods will join forces. But poppers and sushis and that kind of stuff is not usually things that you put on a cracker, and therefore those wouldn't join forces. According to Rosh Hashanah, when you have a limud chus. Those who don't want to get involved in the Shiloh, what options are available for them? So I tell those who either don't eat too much, or the other option is, why did you have to pick for your mezainis for Kiddush Makom Suda something that's a possible mekissin? Why don't you go for something that's not possible mekissin altogether? And therefore, you don't even get into trouble in the first place. So what options are available for you which is not possible mekissin altogether? So in the old days, Lakshin Kugel would be a great option. Lakshin Kugel, as Tosfos writes in the Sefer Brachos, that Lakshin is not a Moitzi in a matter. Remember anything we even spoke about? Let's mention this Tosfos, right? Now, even according to Rabbeinu Tam, who says you have to be Mafish Chala on Lakshin, according to Tosfos, because it's the Blila Avash and it's Bashla. The Tosfos writes you don't have to make a Moitzi on it because it doesn't have to be a Sefas. So Lakshin is a freebie. Lakshin, you can eat a piece of Lakshin Kugel. You can eat all the poppers and all the children you want, and you won't have to wash the bench. For those who don't attend those kiddushes with the lakshin, people are trying to wash the cholesterol a little bit, so they don't have lakshin kugel anymore. So another good thing to do is look for pasta. What kiddush doesn't have a good healthy mamarashach? Either you're an old style kiddush, you get lakshin kugel. If you're a new style, more modern, healthier kiddush, then you get pasta to go. So you take a kazayas of pasta, and then you're free to eat whatever you want. So if you're mavat to run that first kazayas of chocolate chip cookies, then you have a better shot at eating more at the kiddush later on. Okay, so if I say, yeah.
Nice to
follow. It's lechatchila what you're trying to be chayshis from Moshe, I think. Lechatchila. We live in America, trying to be chayshis from Moshe. Okay, so if I say, so we spent a lot of time talking about Hamotzi, and of course we've seen the interplay between the bracha of Hamotzi and Mezonos. Basically, whenever something fails to be Hamotzi, if it's some chamesh has been a dogon, so it becomes Mezonos. And unless it falls into that possible, because the category, we could sometimes double as both. But now let's backtrack a little bit, just to the regular bracha of mezonos, foods that are not going to be hamotzi altogether. Either not going to be hamotzi because they're not possible altogether, or they're not going to be hamotzi because they're possible of kistin, but now you're not being kaveh suda. Or they're not going to be hamotzi because they were hamotzi, you mevatel it by bishul, by tigun, by krusas nikaras, by tzuras apas, all those kind of sugyas that we spoke about in the past. The bottom line is you have some kind of a food, it's chamesh bnei dagon, whatever you think those are, mixed together with water. It didn't quite make the standard of being hamotzi. Mezonos is still going to be. So the correct bracha that you make on it is mezonos. So the bracha of mezonos has a bunch of milas to it. It's not quite the bracha of hamotzi, but it has certain special characteristics to it. It even has a characteristic that hamotzi doesn't have. The Mishnah says in Maseches Brachos that sometimes you can make the wrong bracha on something and still be yaitzei, as long as the bracha is basically emes. So that's what the Mishnah has, the famous halacha, that if you make hadoma on an apple, you yaitzei, because lamaisa apples grow on the ground, they grow on trees which grow on the ground. Vice versa, if you make ha'etz on a carrot, then it wouldn't be yaitzei b'di'evin. And the Mishnah concludes, kula mimamish ha'akol yatza. If you say shahakol on any and everything, so you're going to be yaitzei, because lamaisa, it's a true statement. So you see from this Mishnah that there are two levels of brachas. There's the particular bracha that lechatchila is supposed to make the more appropriate bracha, but b'di'evin, if you made a bracha that's emes, so then b'di'evin you would still be yaitzei. So the Chayyodam writes that the bracha of mezainus is a very, very good bracha, because it's a bracha that, technically speaking, at least b'di'evin, can pata everything, because everything is considered to be mazon. So that's what the Gemara speaks about in the sixth parak of brachas, about the lashon mazon has almost like a double meaning. That sometimes the word mazon refers specifically to the chamesh bnei dagon, and sometimes, depending on whether you use the lashon hazan or the lashon mazon, the Gemara's whole discussion about hachos nedarim. So the word mezonos, in a certain sense, covers other kinds of food as well. And therefore, b'di'evid, if you went ahead and you made a mezonos on an apple, b'di'evid, the chayyadim says you would be yaitzei. You made a mezonos on a carrot, so b'di'evid, you would still be yaitzei. The only things that are not considered to be mazon is mayim and melech, the Gemara says. Those are not considered to be derech mazon b'chlal. So if you made a mezonos on a cup of water, a mezonos on a grain of salt or something, so then you wouldn't be yaitzei the bracha even b'di'evid. Mezonos b'di'evid would be good, at least according to chayyadim. For any reason, it's chayyadim, at least chayyadim says this way. Mezonos has certain milas to it also, over other brachas, is that it impacts on the sugyas of Iker V'Tofel. So one of the klalim that appears in Ketz Mevarchin is the famous klal of Iker V'Tofel. Whenever you have two components, two different ingredients mixed in together with the food, so you don't make two different brachas, you make the bracha on the Iker and it's part of the Tofel. So how do you determine whether something is Iker V'Tofel? So there are multiple ways of doing it. So one way is, if that's mamish the purpose why you're eating it, you're eating it for food X, and you're just using Y to accompany X. So let's say, for example, French fries and ketchup. That happens to be probably not the best example, because ketchup probably would be hadom anyway, but I'll leave that out of the equation. So let's say, ketchup, French fries, what else? Mustard? What? Yeah, I don't want to use crackers yet. Crackers are too complicated. So, cereal and milk. That's a good one. Okay, cereal and milk. So clearly the person's goal is to have a bowl of cereal in the morning. He's not just having a cup of milk in the morning. He's hungry. He wants to have a bowl of cereal. So why does he put milk in the cereal? Because the cereal doesn't taste so good without milk. It's hard to swallow. It's not so geschmack. So you put a little milk and soften it up a little bit. It's much, much better. So clearly the goal was to eat the cereal, and the milk was there just to accompany the cereal. So that's partial. That's called the ikavitafel. Sometimes it's not so clear. Sometimes a person may have in mind to eat both of the foods. He really independently wants both of them. It's just that they're all mixed together as one. So here, the pashas, the halacha is you follow Rov. If you have a real mixture between the foods, then you follow Rov. It's not always so easy to determine. Other foods really move Rov and Yachad. Maybe each one is separate. So that's what some posuk or Hashulchan has. This other posuk have these kind of hagdaras. So let's say you have a mixture of food, and when I take a spoonful, so I don't even get all the foods. It's a hunk. I can have a spoonful of each one separately. So then each one is a separate entity. So then it's not Mu'ur V'yachad, it's not a Tarovus V'yachad, then you would have to require multiple brachas. But if you have something which every time you stick a spoon in, so you always get a little bit, so you have a mixture, you have a food cocktail or something. So it's got some eights in it, it's got some hadamas in there. So every single time you take a spoonful, you've got a little bit of everything in it. So then you would make a bracha based on whatever the robe is. Or let's say you have cholent. So every time you take a spoonful of cholent, there's a little bit of potatoes, a little bit bit of medium, a bottle, whatever it is. So that's considered to be enough of a taraiva. So the rules of ikar v'tofel either depend on what your particular intention is, or based on what you what the rov is. Please don't ask me about sushi, because I don't know the answer to a bracha to make in sushi. Because, so therefore, whenever I eat sushi, I try to make all the brachas before and then other kinds of food. But you know, it could be that that's not necessarily necessary. But I'm not going to talk about sushi right now. So back to the brachas of ikar v'tofel. So the Gemara tells us in brachas that there's one kind of a food that trumps all these rules, and that is kol sheyesh bo chameshes minyadagin. Anything that has one of the five minyadagin in it, so that automatically is considered to be the ikar. The chameshes minyadagin can never be tofel, can never be baltel. Not because it's a motzi, it's tachanan motzi, it doesn't mean mezainus, but if there's some chameshes minyadagin in there, so it by definition has to be the ikar, and therefore the bracha will be mezainus and the entire mixture, again, assuming that it's a mixture. So the Gemara says that this is only true if the Chamesh Shemini Dagan is serving some kind of a real purpose, unlike if their entire goal of putting it there is Ledevek Bialma. The Gemara says if you're simply putting the Chamesh Shemini Dagan in there just as a binder, that is not governed by the rules of Ikar v'tofel, giving mezainus to Ikar. So let's say, for example, you have a piece of gefilte fish. So in gefilte fish, there's always going to be some ways. You know, you have matzabel, you have flour, whatever it is, in these foods, because otherwise the fish is going to fall apart. So that's called the Tevek Miyama, and that's Botel, that's Tofel. Clearly, you're not interested in having a bowl of Matzabel. Your goal is to eat fish, but you need something to keep the fish together. So that would not be governed by the rule of Mizonis always being the Iker. But as long as it's not Tevek Miyama, then you would recite a Brach of Mizonis. There were different nuances in Polskim to try to figure out that we always know for certain what's called Tevek Miyama or not. Sometimes it just boils down to Mitzias. One of the famous Shilas that was raised about 50 years ago or so, was the question is, what's the correct bracha on licorice? Because licorice has flour in it. The question was, it's a lumdish question, what is licorice? Is licorice your, what's the goal of the flour in licorice? Is that the bamashas to it, that you really want to eat the flour, and you're just putting a little chazarai of coloring and flavoring on top of it? Or no, you really want to eat the chazarai, you really want to eat the flavoring, and that's what you really want. You want to eat the sugar and the flavoring. Alawa, we're going to sit down and have a spoonful of sugar and flavoring, so you make this nice long stick, you make it out of flour, you stick all the flavoring to the stick, and sure, you enjoy your flavoring. So if you hold that the goal of the flour was just ledevek v'yama, just to stick together, be able to enable you to eat the flavorings, so then the bracha would be shahakol. If you hold that the real goal is to eat the flowers, then the bracha would be mezainus. So when this shaila first came out, so it was presented to Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe consulted with one of the candy companies. There weren't that many candy companies at the time. One of the Hamish candy companies, whatever it was. And Rav Moshe was informed that they're putting the flour in for the real purpose of eating it. People really, really want the flour. So Rav Moshe said, good, Rav Moshe, from licorice, and hold it in licorice. So then they told Rav Moshe, that's the reason why the flour is there, to give it mamash as a taste, add on to the mahus of the cheftz of the licorice. So he said that the bracha would be mezainus. Then later, he probably had the wrong information. So the other candy companies, when they were consulted, they said, this is not true, b'chal, not true, that nobody puts it in there for the flour. Nobody knows, nobody cares about the flour. It's just literally just a debek v'yama, and therefore the bracha would be shahakol. So in some of the old brachas books, they still have that original psak of Rav Moshe out there, but I think it's probably been, corrected. So I think that we should assume today, for those who are still eating the Kurish, we should assume that the bracha is most probably shahakol. If you go with the rules of the Gemara, that whenever you put in the flour, it enhances the taste of the food, so by definition, it's always going to be mezainus. That's never, unless it's a ledevek v'yama, so that would have some strange consequences for following foods. Suppose it needs schnitzel. So l'chor schnitzel should be a mezainus, because you're putting on the breadcrumbs to give a little bit of taste to it. It tastes better, otherwise it's just a flat piece of chicken. There. The breadcrumbs, it has geschmack a little bit. So l'chor, the brach would be, should be mezainus on schnitzel kinds of foods. Fish cutlets, any of these kinds of things. So, although there was some poskim who said this, Rav Moshe felt that this is not correct. Rav Moshe thought that still the bracha would be shakal on these things. Why is that? So Rav Moshe writes that the hagdara of the Gemara is that whenever it's questionable which is the ikar, so we have klolim as to how to be kaveh with the ikar. So one of the klolim Chazal gave us is that kol sheyesh bo chameshes minyadagin is always the ikar. So whenever there's a questionable ikar in tofel, so one of the rules that we use is chameshes minyadagin. But says Rav Moshe, what if you have a situation where it is objectively obvious to anyone with a half a brain in the head that that one is the ikar, one is the tafel. So Rabbi says, how do you know what's the ikar, what's the tafel? So Rabbi said, when was the last time you sat down for dinner and your wife served you a plate of breadcrumbs? So nobody wants to eat breadcrumbs. Who wants to have a munch, have a snack on breadcrumbs? You don't snack on breadcrumbs. You do eat a piece of chicken. So sometimes your wife prepares you a grilled chicken, sometimes a barbecue chicken, sometimes a schnitzel. So clearly the goal is to eat a piece of chicken. So I would eat chicken without breadcrumbs, but I wouldn't eat breadcrumbs without chicken. So Moshe says that goof is keveya, that the chicken is the ikar. So even though it's true that the breadcrumbs give some taste to it, that's true. But that cloud, the Gemara, is not an absolute halach mashiri chayv layav, where the mezenis is always ikar. It just means that in a question of doubt, what's the ikar, what's the doubt? Well, that's the factor that we use. But if it's so clear as day, one way versus the other, the fact that I eat one without the other, and not vice versa, so therefore the bracha would be shalom. So that's why I think most people follow the practice of Moshe. According to that Hagdar of Moshe, one could argue that pretzel chicken may be a little bit different, because pretzel chicken is kishmakenu. It's not just breadcrumbs on it. It's pieces of pretzel that are on the, that are coating the chicken. People sit down to eat bags of pretzels. So people, some people eat pretzels, some people eat chicken, some people eat both. So if you go with Moshe's reasoning, the only reason why schnitzel falls short of being mezainis is because people don't eat breadcrumbs without chicken. So maybe that wouldn't apply to pretzel chicken. I don't know. Sorry, I ask my kids. I'm not usually for the big eaters of the pretzel chicken. So if you eat the pretzel chicken at your kiddush with your pasta, so they have to figure out what the bracha is supposed to be. Anyway, so it could be a chapa nafkamina, because then you could use that to be mashed in your mezainis for kedayas. You can save some calories off of the cookie. So I don't know. Sorry. Anyway, so Anagela Mai said the bracha mezainis is a pretty special bracha. It's not quite up there of Amaitzi. It's kind of the second tier bracha of Amaitzi, but it does have a couple of interesting chumras to it, or characteristics to it, that it could potentially be Maitzi everything, b'diavad, chayodam, and it changed a little bit some of the rules and regulations of Ikar v'Tafel. Okay, that's not for now. Let's jump next week. We'll try to continue. We'll see. Maybe we're back to Wednesday night. We'll see where our schedule's like next week, but we'll try to get back to some hilchos brachos.